And the person that I see in front of me is none other than Lusani Nechitomboni, who has been with us since the beginning of this series called Biblical Leadership. And he is back again tonight. He has prepared, and I believe that he has consulted and heard from the Holy Spirit on how to move for us to be empowered. And here on Impact 103, we bring you content that will make a difference in your life, and this is no different. Doc?
In our neighborhood, when we hear of problems in our communities, what do we do about it? Do we look at it and say, well, it's none of my business? Someone is going to look at it. But also, when you hear of instances of abuse, maybe child abuse or a man abusing his wife in your neighborhood, what do you do? Do you keep quiet and say, it's none of my business? If I get involved, I might be called in to be a witness if it goes to court. Maybe if you go countrywide, you look at issues of corruption, allegations of all sorts of shenanigans that are going on. What do you do about that? Do we just have these as conversations around the dinner table and do nothing about it because, well, it's none of my business? The politicians are going to really have a look at it. After all, we voted for them to do this. They are paid to solve these problems. How do we react when we get reports of instances where people are doing things that are out of line? How do we react to that? And I want us to look at these questions, reflect on these questions, looking at how Nehemiah responded to a very, very, very bad report that he received about what was going on in Jerusalem. He didn't do like most of us would do, to say it's none of my business, or say, well, someone is going to do it. Someone is going to look at this and find a way of solving the problem. He didn't do that.
Or even say, hey, I'm serving the king, so I'm going to focus on what I'm here to do. Whatever's happening back home, hey, guys, please sort yourself out.
No,
No.
no, Nehemiah didn't. It bothered him. He was concerned about it, and he said he determined to do something about it. But what is very interesting also, maybe before even delving into the details of this, if you look at the whole book of Nehemiah, it's written in the first person. I did this. I did this. And usually when you have the I, you are giving us an account of your own personal experience. There's a degree of ownership in this whole thing. But his response was not to be selfish and to be inward focused to say, well, someone will do it, because 9 out of 10 times, if I say something and I don't do anything about it, hoping that Zibuse will do it, Zibuse will be looking at me and say, no, Lusani will do it. And at the end of the day, nothing gets done. But Nehemiah gave us a blueprint of how we should actually respond to issues of concern in our areas. And I think this is one of the biggest or greatest marks of true leadership. He owned the situation, and he didn't just leave it there. He was determined to do something about it. But one of the things that stands out in Nehemiah's case, he didn't just say, look, I think I understand the environment, I know the people, so I'm going to solve the problem. He sought God's face. He prayed. And if you look at the prayer that Nehemiah prayed right at the beginning of this chapter, in chapter 1, his prayer was very, very easy and very straightforward and clear. He said it was a confessional prayer. And I just want us to look at verse 7 here, which is very clear. Verse 8, actually, it says, remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though you are outcasts in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I determined and where my name dwells. So he's taking God at his word. You made a promise. If we don't follow your commandments, you'll scatter us. But if we come back to you, we return to you. You will really attend to us and bring us back to where you really determined us to be. And if you look at that confession, it is an ownership again. If you look at it, he's saying, not just them, the whole nation, including myself and my household, my father's household. He took ownership of that. And I think for me, that is the first thing that stands out with Nehemiah. He saw the problem. He determined to do something about it. But the first thing he did was to pray. A confessional prayer, owning up to the challenges and the reasons why they were in exile in the first place. That is the first thing that I see Nehemiah actually doing. And that is the one first lesson that we need to take from him in as far as biblical leadership is concerned. Prayer is our fuel. That is the first lesson. The second thing here that I see is really God's two things, God's providence and provision. Nehemiah was a cupbearer in a foreign land. What is a cupbearer in today's language? He was a waiter for the king. You serve the king. Think about it. You are a foreigner. You have access to the king. You serve him his food, his drinks. That, and if you look at it, to me, it talks to the providence of God. God's providence, God in you. If this man is pleased, they will have access to the king, and this will help serve the purpose for which he was there for.
Just to pause a little, something is very interesting for me, that something actually screaming out for me there is, even though the Israelites were in captivity because of their disobedience, from what God has been saying to them, turn from your wicked ways and I will do this, turn, otherwise this will happen. So eventually they are taken to captivity.
Yes.
But even in captivity, he still places them in strategic places.
Exactly.
Where they will then be in a position to receive their provision. I'm also taken back to Daniel, Meshach and Abednego, as well as Shadrach, those Hebrew boys.
Yes.
That even though they were taken from captivity, and they were taken to captivity rather, and they were there, they were still placed strategically. I mean, even Daniel gets to be exalted to the highest position.
Yes.
We look at how Joseph gets to go into Egypt under unfavorable circumstances, and he still gets to be in a very strategic position, the second in command in Egypt. So it seems that God, even though we may deviate from your purpose, you still manage to place us in the right place.
Exactly. You see, the way I look at this is that there are no coincidences in as far as God is concerned. There's nothing like it was just accidental for him to be the cupbearer. That's God's providence for the purposes of this mission.
And trust in God, though.
Exactly.
Because sometimes we can be in foreign lands, we can be in foreign places, we can be doing things that are even foreign to us.
Exactly.
Doing things that we do not believe in, but we need to. Because another thing is, Nehemiah would not have been a cupbearer had he not been faithful, had he not been a faithful steward in what God had entrusted him to do, exactly. To be a cupbearer to the king, not just anyone.
Exactly. So you see, your relationship with God, irrespective of where you are and the circumstances in which you find yourself, your relationship with God will always get to you to where God wants you to be. And if you look at that proximity, and I'll talk to it just now, there's another aspect to it. There's a provision issue here. Before he left, before the king gave him permission to go back, the king asked him a question, because, I mean, if you are saving me every day, I don't know now. Once Zebu says okay, he looks like this. When he's not okay, he's like this. And one day, he comes up there, and the king looked at him and realized that this guy is not okay. You're not sick, but you're not okay. And that was an opening for him to begin to tell his story why he's not okay. It's God's provision, but the second thing, God's providence, but there's God's provision. When he explained, the king asked, what do you want? What do you want? You're telling me all of this. What do you want? And there are two things here that I want to focus on. He asked for letters to the governors to allow him to pass through. He's going to go through other people's land. But if you've got the letter from the king, it allows you to go through. Because I suppose then maybe there were some diplomatic arrangements that if you got the king's letter, you'll be allowed to go through. The second thing here, he also asked for someone here, is referred to as Asaph, the keeper of the forest, to give him timber to build the beams. Remember, the walls had fallen. The gates were destroyed. But you needed the beams among them and the other things. So there's providence of God, but there's provision of God. The two are so linked in this case. So when you're in a leadership position, Zebu say, you have to trust in God. You realize his providence and his provision. These two are so interlinked.
And what's interesting, this guy, Asaph, that he's sent to. He's not given money to go and buy. He's given a letter to take to him from the king.
Yes.
So when we are faithful leaders in whichever space that we find ourselves in, it can be the most menial, the most perceived to be menial role. But if we are leading there, first we lead ourselves,
yes,
and we must lead ourselves according to God's principles. And then when we are faithful with what he has given us, because we are faithful with little, he gets to entrust us with bigger things.
Exactly. In this case, if you think about it, God used a foreign king for his mission.
True.
So again, if you look at it and talk about the concept of the sovereignty of God, he will use anything and anybody.
If he destroyed it, he will rebuild it, because
exactly,
he allowed for the Israelites to be taken captive and for that place to be destroyed. And yet he still has provided all the materials, all the resources to rebuild his own place. So it's not our responsibility to worry about it, but it is for us to be concerned about it and to take the steps towards fulfilling that purpose.
All that Nehemiah needed to do was to say, I'm available, I want to do God's work, I'm faithful, and God provided. But I think 9 out of 10 times, oftentimes we want the resources before we do it, but God is saying, Zebu said, do you want to do my work? All it is, yes, and God provides the resources. You demonstrate your faith, you act, you plan, and God provides. And this is what we learn here in terms of how Nehemiah dealt with these challenges that he was faced with. So that is really the second aspect that I want us to look. The last one, but not least. When he got there, he did something that I believe all leaders must do. He did what, in corporate terms, you call it what? Environmental scanning, isn't it? It's a fancy word which is overused and abused most of the time. But what did he do? He inspected the walls, not during the day, at night, and he only had a few men. He didn't even tell everybody what the Lord has placed in his heart. But he inspected them at night. Why do you think he did that? He didn't want everybody to know what the plans are. Because when you start doing the work God has called you to do, believe in me, you're going to have naysayers. Maybe from your family, maybe from your friends, from all around. Not everybody will like what you do, what you were trying to do. He kept it to himself. He needed to understand the extent of the damage. The what is it that will be required from a resource perspective, material, beams, everything needed for the wall. But how many men will I need? How am I going to organize this man or these families? These people are going to be involved in this. But for him to have that, he needed to understand the extent of the damage. And that gave him a very clear vision of what needed to be done. That's what leadership is. What kind of a vision do you have? Is a clarity? Are you clear on what you believe is a vision that God has placed in your heart? If you have that clarity, you'll then be able to determine what is it that is required materially in terms of the plan, in terms of the other resources that we need, who are the people that I need to work with. So if you look at that, Nehemiah did what I believe every person in a leadership position must do. When you have a plan and a vision, don't go around broadcasting it to everybody. Not everybody has the interest or will understand it to be able to support it. But some might not even like it.
And the most important thing, execution.
Yes.
I think that's another key thing, that yes, you've done your environmental scan. Mm-hmm. Yes, now you know the extent of the damage. Now you have a plan. It's one thing to have those. It's another to then execute the plan.
You see, I always say to people, if you have a plan and it's on paper, it might be a brilliant plan, but it's useless if it is not implemented. And you need to be able to say, this is the plan that I have. This is the vision that informs this plan. This is, at the end of the day, what we want to see happening. How will these walls, when they are fully repaired and the gates, how will they look like? That talks to execution. What is it that we need to do to get to that end point? Who are the people that we're going to place at what point to make sure that this work is done? What are the risks? You will see if you read through the book of Nehemiah, there are so many risks that he had to mitigate. There are so many challenges that he had to navigate, which obviously were meant to derail the implementation process of in this regard. So all that we have to look at here, which is for me very key, in assess the environment, whether you're in a church environment, what kind of a church environment are we in? What are the challenges in this church? What are the demographics of the people in this church? What are the issues that these people are struggling with? Once you have that understanding, you're able to say, okay, this is what we're going to do to deal with the challenges or issues that we feel needed to be addressed. And that in itself is a key aspect when it comes to leadership. Nehemiah gives us the blueprint in as far as this matter is concerned.
You talked about naysayers, and I'm also reminded of the account where Sanballat, he forms an alliance to distract Nehemiah from building the walls, from finishing, because they'd already started.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nehemiah says, if you want to talk to me, you come to me. I'm not going to stop here and go to you.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about the importance of being focused as a leader when you are building something.
It's when you, if you don't have a plan, everybody will come to you and say, let's go there. You go, because you don't have a plan. People will plan your life or plan around you. But when you have a plan and you have clarity of what you want to achieve, I come to you and say, there is this exciting project I want us to work on. You'll be able to say, yes, it's a beautiful project, but I'm not going to be involved in because it will derail me from this project. When you have a plan, it helps you to say no to exciting things, but that are not necessary, that are distractions at that particular time. But also it helps you to say, when someone who wants to derail you comes, you are able to say, this is a distraction and I'm not going to fall for it.
And the endless meetings. There's a principle that you have about meetings. Kindly share that.
I had to bring that one. I suppose this is something that I've taken really from my own personal experience. I hate long meetings. Maybe as a parting shot, because long meetings become workshops. I always believe that if it's my meeting, it's not going to be more than an hour. And I always tell people that are with me that if I speak a second more than an hour, you can walk out. So it puts pressure on me to make sure that we manage the issues. We manage the meeting effectively and efficiently. And the reason for that is I don't want to be coming to a meeting unprepared and start workshopping issues in that particular meeting. Because that demonstrates that you're not prepared, you're not well planned, your execution is not going to work out. I just believe that meetings are not meant to workshop issues. 1 hour at most, even less for that matter, because that helps us with implementation and to manage things effectively and to deal with distractions.
The reason I bring that up is because oftentimes, because that's a beautiful principle in the sense that when you are able to focus a meeting into this is what we prepared, this is what I sent you before this time of the meeting, and I want us, when we get to the meeting, we discuss the solutions. We then discuss how we are going to execute, how we're going to move forward. But it's not a time for us to be now theorizing and bringing all these hypotheses and so on.
Yeah, you see, if you again go back to the story of Nehemiah, I can only imagine the number of people who was managing, and you want to have long meetings. Mm-mm. You're not going to be productive. You won't be able to take decisions. And I can imagine the meetings were clear. What is needed? Who's supposed to do what? What are the resources? What are the challenges? Let's resolve them. Move on.
How far are we?
How far?
Mm.
And I think, again, it goes back to what we talked about last week, delegation.
Yes.
If you want to, I can imagine. And if you go back to the book of Nehemiah, there's a great deal of delegation that goes into this, because you are one person, you can only do so much. So these are things that we have to be very careful about. Be planned, well planned. Because when you are well planned, you're able to manage your meetings, your resources, your timelines, and that way you're able to achieve what you set out to achieve.
I think last one for me,
mm-hmm,
is around planning, because some people get so bogged down into planning. Whether it's a church project, whether it's an outreach, whether it is, you know, whatever it is in whatever space. people get so bogged down into, no, this plan is not right, this, they focus on the details of the plan. They focus on, hey, is it going to be right? And they keep on evaluating their plan. Like, just briefly, as we close this off, talk to us about the importance of planning and executing, especially in agility.
You see, there's nothing like a perfect plan. You can have a plan that you consider to be perfect, but the time it's approved in a month's time, the environment in which you operate has changed, and then it forces you to change the plan. Rather have an incomplete plan, but move into execution very quickly. If you look at all literature, most of the literature, there's so much focus on strategy and planning. But if you look at the execution part of it, it just, in on our daily life, we fall short on that. We place it so much on planning. But planning is useless if you're not going to execute. But what we then need to do is to make sure that we take decisions effectively. Time is of essence. If things fall, let's say you take a decision and implement it and something goes wrong, you go back and correct it. And I think that is really how we need to look at it. That way we manage resources, all resources, time, money, and people much more effectively and guaranteed success.
Thank you. So, friend, I hope you have taken notes and are ready for implementation. I'd like to leave you with this scripture from Paul in Philippians chapter 1, verse 23, where he says, "For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you." So for us to remain in the flesh is more needful for you, you listening to the other end, so that you are equipped, we are equipped, and we walk this journey together. You've been listening to Zibusa El Gunene on Impact 103, and this was God in the Picture. Stay tuned for Focus on the Family.